financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
And we have a very special guest joining us today, Dr. Alex.
I like when we call him Dr. Alex. It's so casual. Yeah.
We're cool.
We could call him McDreamy or McSteamy, but I didn't know if he would find that appropriate or not.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing great, and we have a guest joining us today.
We do. We have joining us today Dr. Alexander, or Alex, Kucherov. He's double board certified in reproductive endocrinology and infertility and obstetrics and gynecology at Alum Fertility. Wow, that's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. He's helped countless individuals and couples navigate the complex and emotional journey of family building, not to mention the expense, which is why he's here today in part. But we're going to talk about the whole gamut. He's done it all with warmth, science, and compassion. So whether you're planning ahead or struggling to conceive, Dr. Kucherov probably brings real-world insight for you into fertility and the care and the hope that comes with it. So welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. Doctor. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frances, for that amazing introduction. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So, you know, I think people tend to think of, somebody who's a doctor who's dealing with these kinds of scientific and very complex issues as maybe a little stoic or maybe even heartless. But I believe that your journey actually is why you are this way. Do you mind talking about why you approach it in this way? Do you mind talking about your personal journey here? It's pretty sensitive, but will you tell us?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to get into it. I mean, I decided to do this as a specialty before attempting to build my family. I really enjoyed my endocrinology and reproductive medicine courses in medical school, and I did an OBGYN residency. And it was during that time I really decided that this is what I wanted to focus on, was fertility and family building. And so I went into my fellowship for reproductive endocrinology and fertility before building a family, and got married around that time. And we tried to start building our family for about a year, and actually had infertility as a couple. And because this is what I did, I decided to do an evaluation, a fertility evaluation for myself and my wife. And she's happy with me talking about this, by the way. I've talked to other people about this. The only thing that we found is that she was having basically longer menstrual cycles than typical, ovulating a little bit irregularly. And in that situation, the first line strategy is typically oral medication, just pills, to try to make the menstrual cycle happen a little bit more regularly, a little bit more obvious when ovulation is happening. We can do monitoring of the ovulation cycle in the office to make sure we know, you know, exactly when to have intercourse. And that worked, basically.
I'm really glad that you said, before you told us all of these details, that your wife was fine with this and you talked to her.
Yes.
Okay, so Dr. Alex, so this ended up working for you, being able to kind of regulate that. But when you were going into it, were there myths that you had heard about? I mean, obviously, being a doctor, you had more information, but about male versus female infertility issues?
I think one of the common myths out there is that fertility is a strictly female issue, and that it is quite rare. And, you know, many of us go through our whole lives, especially women, being told, like, try to prevent pregnancy. don't let it happen. But when you're ready for it, hey, it'll just kind of happen. And that's kind of the end of it. For a lot of people, that's not true. First of all, about a third of male-female couples, there is a male factor in fertility, a sperm issue of some kind. Whether that's something that is intrinsic to the male partner, whether that's something that is caused exogenously. So, for instance, taking testosterone supplements or things like that. There are lots of different things that can affect the sperm. And many times there's not obvious reason why the sperm might be affected. So, yes, about a third of couples have some component of male factor infertility, which is a lot of people. The other major myth is that infertility is rare. Totally not true. About 12% of couples in the world are affected by fertility challenges. That's a lot of people, 12% of couples. And so quite common. And one of the biggest reasons it's becoming more common is that people are waiting longer to begin their families. Back in the olden days, early 1900s, people, were married in their late teens, early 20s, and having kids very quickly and very early. And a lot of the issues that we see now around fertility really didn't come up. Some of them did, and they didn't know how to handle them appropriately. But some of the things we see now, lower egg numbers as we go on in life, lower egg quality, certain sperm issues, other things related to general health that can affect fertility, weren't issues because people were building their families earlier. Nowadays, people are waiting longer, appropriately building their careers, living the lives they want to lead. But it's becoming more of an issue.
I have two different friends too, and I'm wondering if you know any statistics or data on this that got pregnant really easily with the first baby, but they were trying to add, like 2 years later, a sibling, and they just could not get pregnant the second time and really didn't understand it and were really struggling with that. Is that common?
Yes. So primary infertility versus secondary infertility are two pretty separate entities. And often have different causes for them. Secondary infertility, which means you've gotten pregnant in the past, or perhaps have had a baby in the past, and now we're trying to continue to build your family, quite common. I see plenty of folks who, again, often going back to age issues, may have had their first baby when they were maybe 30 or 31, 32, maybe another one at kind of 33, 34, 35, and now maybe 37, 38, looking for baby number three, just as an example. There's a huge difference between even 35 and 38 in terms of egg quality. As an example, at age 35, you'd expect about two-thirds of embryos that you form when adding sperm to be genetically chromosomally normal. At 38, it goes down to half. At age 40, it's now about 40% of embryos are normal. 41, it's about 25%. You can see how things change really quickly. So it's quite common to see that. Absolutely.
I'm sure that Illume handles this, holistically and provides support around all of these different areas, including financial, which of course we'll talk about. But what do you do, particularly, I wouldn't say particularly for men, but there must be a pride factor. There's some psychology going on here about why, who's broken and why, and how can you fix it? And then all of that must come into play. I'm thinking of the old days when people used to just say that the wife was too uptight, and if she just relaxed, they'd have babies, right? I'm hoping we're much
You wouldn't
further
believe
along
how
than that.
often I hear that still. Oh, my
No.
auntie just said, just relax and it'll happen. That's a great one, a classic. That's an oldie but goodie. Unbelievable. But it's there. You're correct. It's there in the culture. And different cultures, feel differently about different things, etc. But you're correct in the sense that there is still sometimes a perception from men that like, oh, this is her problem, which is totally inappropriate, I would say.
I bet
However,
that doesn't help.
it doesn't help. I am reassured by a lot of the couples, the male female couples I meet, where men are often actually quite plugged in to this process and are very happy to do whatever needs to be done to build their families. And it's actually quite reassuring. I don't even when I started, really practicing OBGYN about 15 years ago now. It was not really the vibes I was getting at the time from a lot of people. So I think maybe some things have changed. So I would say overall, most of the men I meet are actually pretty plugged in and ready to roll.
I'm just curious, especially when you were talking about how the numbers, I guess, of viable embryos, is that how you put it, like drop so drastically as you get a little bit older. Do you recommend people taking on the expense of freezing their eggs at a certain age then if they plan on having kids?
I absolutely recommend, if you can, to do some kind of fertility preservation. If you feel like you're not going to be ready to begin to build your family by your early 30s, let's say 31, 32, 33, If you're kind of around that age and haven't started building your family, haven't really, or don't have any plans to, but kind of want to keep that door open, that is really the end of the peak of your kind of fertility powers for your whole life, is kind of the early 30s. It starts to change a bit in your kind of 35, 36, and then it changes very quickly at 37. I mean, really, at 37, every year after that is a huge difference, not just in terms of egg numbers, which also go down over time, unfortunately, but also the egg quality. There's a major difference. So yes, if you are in your early 30s and have not considered freezing eggs, I would absolutely recommend it around that time if you can. And there are different ways to do it, and different, we talk about this, but different financing options, et cetera, if there's no employer coverage. Most employers do not cover elective, what we'd call elective egg freezing. Some do, and there are certain plans that do, but unfortunately, many do not at this time.
But I know from our conversation before we get on the air that there are options, and I promise we're going to talk about that in length in the second half. But just before we go to break, can you talk a little bit about how cultures are different when it comes to fertility?
I think I've seen the gamut of how people approach fertility as something to be addressed or not addressed. And there are certain situations from anybody where people are kind of in denial about it. I have seen it more for men than for women, but I mostly see women in my practice because I'm an OBGYN. But again, this is something that I think has changed, at least in my experience. Like the folks that I'm seeing now, certainly in my practice, folks are usually coming to the practice together, and want to be evaluated together. There are certainly some circumstances, and I used to see this again more in the past, but less now, where I'll see a female patient and she'll say, I don't really want to involve my male partner now. I kind of want to get checked out, is one way to say that. Make sure that I'm okay. And then I'll involve him as though the male partner is like a secondary thing. But it's in my opinion, it's kind of sad that folks would feel like they need to be like, well, I did all of my testing and I didn't find anything wrong, in quotes. So now it's your turn, versus like, we're kind of in this together and let's figure it out. And it's a much less efficient way to go about finding out what's going on if you evaluate one person. And then I have to wait and do all the testing, okay? And then we get the other partner in. It's like, we would rather just do everything all together. Let's get it figured out and get going, you know?
Yeah, and I think we probably want to know that both partners are interested in raising a family or having a family and starting a family. So anyway, I think this is a really interesting conversation, and I'm glad we're having it. And I'm glad that you're able to explain things in such accessible terms. So I'm going to challenge you when we come back to start explaining how we're going to afford this fertility trip, given what insurance offers these days. And I know that you know your way through these waters. So I just want to thank you and prepare people when we come back. We will be talking about money and more about infertility and the treatment of it with Dr.
All right.
Kucherov.
In the meantime, can I get your phone number, Francis?
Of course, Jess, 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a very special guest joining us today, Dr. Alex.
I like when we call him Dr. Alex. It's so
Yeah.
casual.
We're cool.
We could call him McDreamy or McSteamy, but I didn't know if he would find that appropriate or not.
My
I think he's blushing.
wife would love it.
I think I love your wife. Okay. All right. So I promised before the break that we would talk about money. Arg, money and infertility. Expensive stuff, right?
In our practice especially, we take it very seriously. We have every patient that comes into our practice gets their own finance and insurance advocate who's really dedicated to that patient and helps them kind of navigate the journey of, unfortunately, dealing with insurance companies and benefits, making sure that we have a direct communication with them and that the patient really understands everything that goes into it. You're right, it is very complicated. A lot of it is based on, in this country especially, employer-based benefits. which company they work with, what those specific benefits are. A lot of it has to do with what state you live in, because every state is different about what they mandate or don't mandate the commercial insurance companies provide. Every state also has different rules regarding public insurance, Medicaid, et cetera, and what they may or may not cover. It's a very complicated world, but we're happy to jump into it and see.
I can
Okay.
imagine it's got to be hard to navigate too. Like, okay, you've got the pressure of wanting to get pregnant so badly, but then also the pressure of it's costing so much every time you have the treatment. So the pressure of not having to go through that two or three times financially as well. How do you balance that?
It's difficult, I think, as you're alluding to. It's very, very difficult. As from a medical standpoint, unfortunately, we have to be acutely aware of what the coverage is for folks. So as an example, so every insurance company is different, but I have there's one insurance company that we work with that they you can that they will cover four attempts of fertility treatment. And they make no distinction between the absolute lowest level of fertility treatment, which is like oral medicine, versus IVF. They make no
Oh
distinction
boy.
between the things. You get four attempts at whatever it is.
Oh.
There's even caveats to that, whereas some insurance plans say, okay, you get four attempts at this, you get three of this, you get two of this.
Yeah.
Some have no limits at all, and some have even more complicated plans. So yes, it's very, very complicated. But we have a whole, we, I mean, in fertility groups generally have finance folks to help navigate this.
Don't you love those little cuties, insurance companies? Oh boy. So I was really happy when you said they'll pay for four attempts until you said, but they don't differentiate between the kinds of attempts. So are there grants available to help people have children, and how does that work?
Yeah, so there are many groups out there, typically nonprofit groups, that if there are financial challenges, can help folks. So, for example, in our practice, there's a grant called Nest Egg, which is very, they all have very cute names, a lot of these grants. So there's Nest Egg, and these are for folks that are, there's various, there's typically specific criteria, but you can get financial assistance for fertility treatment.
Yeah.
There are grants I know out there for folks that have experienced recurrent pregnancy losses to get fertility treatment. There are often cultural and religious based fertility grant options. I certainly know that for the Jewish community, there are grants out there on a local and national basis to help pay for fertility treatment as well.
That's great. But wait, there's more. What else can you, what else can you tell us about money?
So there are plenty of companies that fertility groups work with to help fund fertility treatment. So, for example, our group works with a company called Sunfish. Again, a very cute name. That has grants and loans and different packages to help navigate fertility costs. So, for example, if you were to do self-pay for a fertility treatment cycle, in our practice, you have to pay basically everything up front in order to be able to do it. Whereas with this, third party, you can pay them over time, and then they will pay us to cover everything, which is really nice.
That is really nice. Yeah.
All kinds of different options from that standpoint. So I'd recommend talking to the fertility group that you're working with to see what kind of options there are that are available.
Yeah, I think it's really important to not just say, well, we can't afford it. You know, it's one thing to not be able to afford to care for your family. It's another to not be able to afford to start your family.
The one other thing I would suggest is that check with your employer about what the coverage is. Certainly in many states there are mandates now for fertility coverage. Often it has to do often small employers, so under 100 employees, those types of insurance plans are not necessarily required to cover fertility diagnosis and treatment, but the larger companies may be required to do that. And within even the company, there might be multiple different plans that are available to you. There are on the health insurance exchanges, there are also insurance plans that you can buy that do cover fertility. I certainly know that in New York and Connecticut, the top tier, the gold and platinum plans, you have to kind of dig for them, and you may have to call the insurance company because they don't post totally everything on those marketplaces. But many of them do cover fertility coverage, do cover fertility treatment. And although it might be more on a month-to-month basis than some of the lower-level plans, over time you will actually save money because of, unfortunately, how expensive fertility treatment can be.
Yeah, now
This
you're in my camp. Oh, I'm sorry, Jess. Go
that's
ahead.
okay. Is this something where Francis, how you can do the coverage for most works where you don't pay taxes, like if you put so much aside for health,
Oh, a
a
flex
flat,
plan?
yes, I'm wondering if you would this fall under that?
Yes, you can absolutely use HSA
Yeah.
accounts and that type of thing to pay for fertility
Yeah.
treatment. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, but he said something more interesting to me than that as a problem solver about money. And it was the tip, the hint that first of all, you need to be proactive and check on your insurance and be an advocate for yourself and say, does my plan cover this? How can I get a plan that covers this? But there was yet another little thing in there where people are considering, they'll change jobs because this plan has a this company offers a 401k or this company offers that. If you're thinking of changing your job, this is a question you might want to ask going in. What's your coverage for infertility? Are you more than 100 employees? Can I talk to your health company? How can I find out? Because this is really worth some dollars to you if you need this kind of care. What about, I mean, there's no more pre-existing condition problem with coverage, thank goodness. So do they try to get around it with infertility and say you've tried before? Well, how sneaky are these little insurance companies when you're trying to get them to pay for this stuff?
So there's two major situations where there could be issues sometimes getting coverage. The first one is related to the definition of infertility, and specifically, I mean the definition of infertility is really for a heterosexual male-female couple. Important to make that distinction for what I'm about to say. Basically, trying to conceive for a year under age 35 with unprotected intercourse, basically. Above age 35, basically 6 months. Above age 40, the definition is a little bit nebulous. You could kind of make the argument you should do fertility treatment immediately if you're over age 40 because of those egg quality issues we talked about before. So that's one thing. If you're in a situation where kind of you're 33, you've been trying for 6 months, there's no obvious thing going on. There's no like, it's different if you're like, well, I'm 33, I've been trying for 6 months, but I had ruptured appendicitis. And they had to do surgery and et cetera. You might think maybe the tubes might be injured from that. That's a different story. But like nothing obvious going on, they might say, like, hey, you have to try for a year before we're gonna cover any of this. The
I'm
other
wondering who's
situation.
monitoring that.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do they know?
So they look at the documentation from the providers, from the doctors and so on. It's of course we have to document everything in an appropriate and correct and legal way. And that's
No,
very
what we meant was who's monitoring how long you've been trying for.
Right.
Oh, it's a good point, isn't it? Good
And
point.
it's an important thing to know going in. And once again, here we are talking about arming yourself with knowledge before you go to bat.
Exactly.
Because if you know these answers, you can maybe provide a better story about what you need.
The other thing that we see quite often is for same-sex couples. So clearly, if you are, for instance, in a same-sex female couple, you have, and this is the definition of infertility. This has been changed in the past year or two. You have male factor infertility. If you're in a female-female couple, you have no sperm in that relationship, right? So you need to use sperm donation to begin to build your family. And that is infertility. You need sperm. Now, in those situations, I see a lot of folks that might they have different thoughts and opinions about how they want to build their family. For instance, they might want one partner is going to provide the eggs and also carry the pregnancy, but sometimes they want to do reciprocal fertility treatment where one person provides the eggs, but the other partner carries the pregnancy. And for that, in that situation, that first partner has to do IVF to get the eggs out to then be fertilized, and then the embryo is transferred into the other partner. Sometimes insurance companies might say, we're not going to pay for that because you have not had, in quotes, sperm exposure for enough months to be able to justify the cost of doing IVF. So they might say that that first partner has to do IUI or insemination using donor sperm for X number of months before they would cover the IVF treatment. They have to prove that they are not able to conceive that way. But that's the opposite of what the couple wants to do. The couple doesn't want to do that. They want the eggs from one partner and the other partner to carry. So it's very difficult to navigate.
I have a question about that. If one partner is providing the eggs, the other partner is carrying them, is there any sort of risk of rejection like there would be in transplant or anything else like that?
It's a great question. The evidence does not support that. No, actually.
Interesting.
There are equivalent pregnancy rates. There's really fascinating stuff. We don't have to get into the biochemistry and the biology of
No,
this too
it's
much, but
fascinating.
what's really one of the more fascinating things, I think, is that, when you carry a pregnancy, your uterus directs traffic genetically, and turns certain genes on and off. Again, we don't have to get into the details, but basically the uterus tells the pregnancy to basically add hydrogen atoms to certain genes to turn them on and turn them off. And so that's a very interesting, unique, it creates a unique pregnancy and unique baby, so that even though you might be carrying an egg from one person and a sperm for another person for that embryo, you might think, I don't have anything to do with this pregnancy except the carrying part, which is very important, of
But you
course.
do,
But you
yeah.
do, and you're actually shaping that pregnancy in a way that's unique to you. Whereas if that embryo was transferred into another person, that would be a different human being that was born.
Well,
Unbelievable.
and I would think that that would be, in fact, the reason that some same-sex couples want to do it this way, so that it is a baby of both people, a human from both people. That's fascinating. I would talk to you forever about this sort of the medical part of it. The whole LGBTQ versus heterosexual cultures, all of the differences that are here. I think I should give you a closing word, though. Is there something that we haven't asked you that you would like to discuss before we go?
I would encourage folks that are interested in building their families to talk to a fertility specialist earlier rather than later, especially if it's been 6 months, a year, you're trying on your own. The worst case is that you do an evaluation and you find something else. Well, okay, everything's okay. You can keep trying a little bit longer. That's fine. At least you know about it. Part of our job is to empower people to make decisions about their lives, just like that's your job, is you empower people to make financial decisions.
That's
Part of my
right.
job is to empower people to make fertility and reproductive decisions. And if you find something that you can act on, which is many times we can act on things that we find, it's like, okay, at least we know about it, and now we can make some changes and assist with this. Not all fertility treatment is, super high level fertility treatment like IVF. Most people
Right.
don't do high level fertility treatment. They do much lower, mellow things. To improve the chances on a month-to-month basis. So I would encourage folks to reach out to a fertility specialist, to discuss it.
Thank you. Yeah, I would think that even things like diet, alcohol, lifestyle, those things are very easily managed, changed, and probably play a part in this role. And I just want to tell people that just like, anything we talk about, there are always exciting changes coming down the pike, but you can't take advantage of those if you don't gain some knowledge. So I would encourage anybody who's interested in learning more about this to reach out to a fertility expert like Dr. Kucherov and see, just gain some knowledge and see what you need to know in order to take the next step. Don't make it into this enormous, barrier that it's so complicated and so expensive that you won't be able to do it. Just dip your toe in the water and find out a little bit more and then see where that takes you.
Couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Francis, can we get your phone number?
Of course, Jess. You can reach us at 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. Dr. Alexander Kucherov, Dr. Ram, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor on WHMP.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Boys. I got to thank you, because this whole project for Hug Your Money, it kind of brought to fruition my lifelong desire. Was, when I was a kid, I always wanted to do cartoon voices. And welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Francis Ram. Hello.
Hey Jay. Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
We got a little buddy in the background.
I see Pablo right there. Oh
Right there.
boy, this is great.
Well, I'd love to say that that's the real Pablo, but you are the real Pablo's voice, not the
Well,
Pablo, but
yeah.
the real Pablo's
I
voice.
got to thank you because this whole project, with, for Hug Your Money, it kind of brought to fruition my lifelong desire was, when I was a kid, I always wanted to do cartoon voices. I mean, as we grow up, we watch the stuff that we watch, and, it was like, hey, boo boo, or, that kind of stuff. And I really got into cartoon voices. And fortunately, I've been able to do voice work, whether it's recording commercials, being on the radio, narrating books, but never had the chance to do something, cartoon characters. And this was fun. Yeah, this Pablo and his Pirate Cove.
It was really fun. Here we are, and I'm broadcasting today from Pablo's Pirate Cove. You can see him. Isn't he? I love Pablo. I love Pablo. So the reason we're talking about Pablo's Pirate Cove and Pablo, well, with Jay Dean, our guest today, even though you're anchoring the show as well, is because people have asked us, where did this come from? Somebody's actually said to me, I didn't get it. Are you targeting kids now? No, I am not targeting children. This is a free lesson for kids, right? It's designed to facilitate the conversation that parents might have with their children. This is probably appropriate for ages 5 to 10, maybe slightly older, maybe 5 to 11. Although I have teenagers now saying I want Pablo t-shirts and things, right?
Well,
I want
there you
Pablo
go.
swag.
I tell you, you can create something that can explode. Well, the thing is too that you and I have talked about this privately in different conversations, that how I don't even have children, but I do have nieces and nephews, and many of them, several of them are grown up now. But the frustrating part is it doesn't seem to be that kind of education for kids. The things that I don't know, at least my generation, my father said, this is how you balance a checkbook. This is how, or how to save. I mean, does that stuff even happen in the school systems anymore?
A checkbook? Who writes in a checkbook
I
anymore?
know.
No, of course
I know.
not. Of course not. But
Now,
the
see,
basics.
I'm old fashioned. I drink this stuff. So, I
You
mean,
got a lot of moxie, Jay.
that I
All
do.
these old-fashioned phrases, kids won't have any idea what we're talking about. We're really not 100 kids. But you know, those things have moved fast. I mean, I remember our fourth grade teacher teaching us how to write a check in class. We all had to bring in, she brought in paper checks. We all had to bring in, you know, a note from our parents that it would be okay. And she taught us how to write a check. And it was interesting because those basics are still here. You might not be writing a paper check, but you still need to know if you have enough money in your account, right? Now, at the age that we did this one for, and heads up, there may be, I've heard a rumor that there is a teen or tween Pablo coming our way.
Wow.
A little cooler, maybe doing some skateboard tricks, maybe dressed a little cooler, but I'm
Wow.
going to grow up, I hope. So the basics are the same. And at this age, what we're talking about, even though we are introducing complex strategies, right? We're teaching them about interest, budget. I mean, these things are really boring to the average human. And we've managed to put it into a little cartoon that does not work like a PowerPoint, right? It's very light. Like glossing over these things, but they get it. So, for the interest, of course, we use jelly beans, right? What happens if you put jelly beans in a jar and the next day there's more jelly beans, right? This is how interest works.
Yep.
We introduce those kinds of things using a three-jar system: share, spend, save. And the kids seem to be getting it right away. I had no intention of doing this. I'd been asked for years to teach kids about money because just what you said, Jay. It's not being taught in the schools. And the story is, we had a 7-year-old visiting us, and she grabbed my computer away when she saw that I was making a video for adults and said, "Do you do this for kids?" And by the next day, I had created her cat Her cat's name is Pablo.
Oh.
Created Pablo, and to get an alliteration on Pablo, I used pirate cat. So Pablo the pirate cat was born, and then it went from there. I called you and said, "Jay, I have a fun project. Maybe you would be interested in doing it." And you said, "Can you be here at 12:30? I'll re-record what I need to." And you did.
If I get to become the teenage Pablo, I don't know what I'm going to do. Dude, I don't
You better start working on it.
know what's really nice too is the spend, save, and share. That's something that, with all due respect to my parents, who I loved very much, they didn't necessarily put that into the mix of here's some important things you need to know about money. Spending and saving, but sharing that, I mean, that's just wonderful,
Well, it's a luxury I have when I'm talking to small children, because they want to share with their friends. They still want to be generous, and they don't need to feel greed. And I don't want them to feel greed. I want parents to have this wonderful conversation about how money is a tool, and not how and how it should be respected, and how it should be used well, and how you get to make the decisions, and your decisions are what matter in the long run, because sadly, part of that share category, or part of the spend, or part of the save category, may end up being taxes or college or something that's just too abstract at this age to talk to kids about. But we cement that idea that you need to divide your money, call it whatever you want. You're going to need to learn how to apportion your money and spend it in a way that, or allocate it in a way that makes your life better. And if you care, the lives of people around you better. So, yeah, it turns out that it's getting great play and acknowledgement, and we wrote a theme song for Pablo.
Pablo the pirate cat sails the seas with a hat on his head and a tail in the breeze. He's got a treasure chest, but here's the twist. It's filled with money lessons just for kids. Spend a little, save a bit, share with others, use your wit. In Pablo's Pirate Cove we learn.
So Pablo the pirate cat now has a theme song, which is available on SoundCloud, and when I last checked, had about 800 views in a few days.
Where though? That was the amazing part that you told me. They're listening in Great Britain, Korea, and somewhere else. Would you say in South America, where it's?
Fascinating. Vietnam was one of the highest converted.
Oh,
United States was tops, and then we had the UK, and I think Vietnam was next. I mean, it's free music, but it's really cute. He's
Yep.
sailing the seas with his tail in the breeze, and he's teaching kids lessons. These are lessons in his pirate chest just for kids, right? So anyway, that's a little background on Pablo the pirate cat, but I want to talk to you about why a professional like you, who's done, at least 30 books for Audible, who's been a voiceover artist on the air for how many years, Jay?
I don't know, since 1971, I
Whatever
guess.
many years, right? Okay. And why somebody, when I called him and said, "I have this sort of fun project, maybe you'd be interested," said, "Can you be here at 12:30?" And we had so much fun doing this,
Oh,
right?
yeah. It was all scripted. To me, that's the best part. If it's scripted, you're all set.
That's the first thing you said is, "Do you have a script?" And I said, "Sure," but it was all written in Pablo's voice, or Dr. Finwell's voice, right? My sidekick, my alter ego, Dr. Finwell, who is our AI concierge now and helping with Hug Your Money, right? And I came in, and you and I sat in a booth, your booth that we see right now on the screen. And I sat opposite you and gave you one script, and we took highlighters and said, "You're going to say these lines, I'm going to say these lines." And you just got Pablo. You just Pablo should say this, you would tell me. I think Pablo would say this.
The thing that fascinated me was at some point down the line, I got to see footage of some of these people that I grew up with. In terms of, again, you got to be my age, I guess. Quick Draw McGraw, watching Bugs Bunny, watching whatever. I'd love to pay homage to some of the people that I grew up with. There are basically five people that come to mind. Paul Frees, Dawes Butler, June Foray, Sterling Holloway, and Edward Everett Horton. And I think people will recognize the voices for sure.
Needless to say, the luncheon there under the trees was a great success, and a good time was had by Puritans and Indian alike. Everything came off beautifully, with the exception of one minor catastrophe.
Hello, I'm what is known as an identifiable character. When you see or hear me...
So, your great, big, wonderful moose, maybe you could see to it that Hard Knocks wins next Saturday.
Bullwinkle, you can't do that!
Oh, yes, time for my stoutness exercise. Up, down, up.
Once upon a time, in a large forest, there lived a woodchopper, his wife and their two children, Hansel and Gretel. It was a beautiful forest full of trees, flowers, butterflies, and streams. Matter of fact, there was just one thing missing.
So, I mean, do you recognize any of them?
Oh, yeah.
You're not as old as I am. You're nowhere near that age. But...
Well, I'll tell you, Rocky and Bullwinkle, of course, right away, right? But no, I recognize all of them, but unlike you, I don't know all their names, right? But I think the clip says, if you hear me or see me, and the key here is if you hear me. It conjures that image immediately. This Pablo the Pirate Cat cartoon or video book, really, right, is not, an animated Disney film, right? It's very basic. Kids seem to be glued to it. In fact, it's the parents who say, I thought it was long, and the kids go, no, they're watching it again, right?
Yeah.
Fun pirate music under it and all of that. But I think that kind of simplicity causes it not to be distracting. The message comes through. There's something on every screen that we're changing, right? That we're teaching them one screen at a time, right? It's only about 30 slides long, right? But they're animated slightly. And Pablo is in every slide. You got to look for him. Sometimes he's in a tree. Sometimes he's on a desk. Sometimes he's behind a person. Sometimes he's doing some shopping. You know, Pablo's doing his thing in there. Sometimes he just scoots across onto a sidewalk to show his little face. But it's really a way to disarm immediately. If we could get through to parents, to adults in the same way, which we try to do, right, by removing that obstacle, that barrier to entry about managing money, because it sounds so scary. That's what adults come to me for, right? I'm not good with money. Help me fix my money. And soon they have skills that really let them do that. What we're doing here is at an age where children are absolute sponges and will learn anything, especially from a cat. Okay. And soon a cat and the cat's friend, I think, Lola, my Bengal, who's here right now, she may make an appearance. I think that's how kids learn, and they don't have a resistance to it. They're watching a cartoon. I mean, this is just like they learn about anything else, only this skill, if we can make it fun and impart it in a way that kids grab onto it, can be just fabulous. And I cannot thank you enough, because it would not have been the same, Jay. It would not have been the same with Dr. Finwell's voice throughout. Dr. Finwell is teaching the lessons. Pablo is learning the lessons. So the kids learn along with Pablo. Yeah. With yeah. Jay's voice. Do you think that you could do a little Pablo voice right now for us before?
I'm not quite sure what exactly how I did it. Does that sound like him? I'm not sure. But you know, Dr. Francis Ram, I'm sure people have some questions. Can we get your phone number?
Yes. Yes.
That's a real cue.
Yes, Jay, you could get our phone number. It's 413-773-3333.
And we'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Francis Ram.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Francis Ram, and I neglected to get the web address in there. Of course, it's hugyourmoney.com, and we're talking about
Pablo, the pirate cat.
And now, if you've already kind of explored this and seen it, and now the kids can actually, with adult supervision, email Pablo. It's just simply Pablo@hugyourmoney.com. This is very exciting. You know what you were saying before in the previous segment about kids learning, and I'm not surprised, because as kids growing up, and I'm not saying that parents don't read to their kids anymore, but this is kind of the same thing. I mean, is it a flashy Disney thing? No. But it's like them having a book read to them with pictures, you know, and like it goes right along with what people are doing now. Here it is, you know, they're on their electronic devices.
You can find Pablo the Pirate Cat on YouTube. Just look up Pablo the Pirate Cat. That's it. He'll pop right up for you. And you want the 17-minute version. Pablo the Pirate Cat, look for a 17-minute version. But you'll get it right away. You know, I don't have children either, Jay, but I was one, right?
Oh, sure.
And I've helped raise some. And I know what that feels like, to have a parent spend time with you and read a book where you get to choose, are you going to turn the page or not? And it doesn't just whiz by you. And kids know now, they're so video savvy, so computer savvy. They know, they just hit the pause button. There's a slide at the end that says, you know, you've earned bonus questions. And there's a slide with a lot of text on it that are bonus questions. There's no way I could have left that on the on the screen for, you know, 2 minutes while a kid reads it. Yeah, yeah. But the kids know right away, hey, I want to go back and see that. They poke the button and they just go back and read the questions. Nice. Right.
It kind of, I shouldn't say sneaks the information into them, but kind of, you know, and they get to love Pablo, and they're, you know, they're asking for his t-shirts now. I don't know. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a sensation.
Oh, look who's here.
Oh,
Lola.
Lola.
Now, Lola might be Pablo's friend soon. It's not holding her very comfortably. Oh. Can you say hello? Hey,
she's Lola. A Bengal?
She's a Bengal. Yeah, see her little spotted belly?
Oh, yeah. Talks a lot, huh? Does she vocal?
Only when you ask her questions. She's not. She doesn't walk around meow, meow, meow at all. In fact, she won't even meow if she's hungry. I have to ask her, like, are you hungry? Lola, are you hungry? See, could you hear her?
No.
Oh,
no,
I couldn't. She meowed at me. Yeah. Yeah. She has food right here, by the way. Anyway, but she will talk to me about it. So is it part of something new? Well, there's a lot of new stuff going on at Hug Your Money.
Yeah, yeah.
The biggest new thing is that we are now available as a benefit for groups. So a school, a company, an organization can now get financial wellness to all their people for really affordable money. You know, the same way we've done everything, no major commitment. You're going to love it, so you stay. You know, we just talk to people about what can help their people be more financially fit. And we're hoping that trickles down to children as well. You know, if you talk to just about any adult, they will tell you that they wish they knew more about how to manage their money. And mostly they wish that somebody would teach their kids, or that they taught this in school. You know, I never run into an adult that doesn't say, well, don't you think they should teach this in schools? So here we are to provide financial wellness to adults. And if it continues to go the way it's going, maybe we will have a children's program in schools.
And it's not just, you know, well, what one should we pay first? It's like there's a system that basically tells you the best way to do it. It's science, right? It's science and math, and it gets the what you owe paid down without necessarily impacting you if you just did it some haphazard way, right? Yeah,
it's a chessboard versus a checkerboard. Now we're looking out 10, 15, 20 moves in advance and giving you a plan to help you win. So that's really what we're doing. But I too want to go back to what we're talking about with Pablo, although I truly appreciate that you're a fan of the system and that you care about helping people be financially fit and doing better. But
it's the one thing it seems like in this world of late, you can control. You know, I mean, that power you can take back is more than empowering. It's like it puts you in a position so you don't feel like, you know, is the National Guard going to invade Northampton next?
Money by itself. Yeah, the thing is, money by itself, Jay, sorry to cut you off. Money by itself sounds like this this thing you have to learn, or it's math, or it's scary, or it's, but there's no escaping it. Unless you're a monk, you're going to have to deal with your money. Okay. So if we can give people a way to manage that easily so they don't have to think about it. Now they're driving a car instead of the space shuttle. Okay. It's not so scary. They know how to do it. They get in every day. It's almost rote routine and it gets them from point A to point B. That's the kind of thing we're trying to do. But I want to go back because I really care about this conversation about Pablo and about your role in it. Would you tell us when you became interested in doing voices?
Oh boy. Yeah, it's funny that one of the one thing that my mom, God rest her, she would have wanted me to go into art. One of the first things I had a talent for, I guess, was drawing cartoons. And I did this very early, like 4 or 5 years old, and I think I remember looking at the back of a cereal box with Quick Draw McGraw, and I drew it out, had these crayons, and my mother kind of went, "Wow. How did you do that?" I said, "I don't know. I just drew it." Well, going forward, I wanted to make the balloons, and I said, "Mom, how do I make them say such and such?" So she taught me the words, and so that kind of helped me along in school. But then watching the things on TV, I just was fascinated by the fact that, you had these characters with their voices. I don't know. It seems like a I'm really geeking it up here, but I guess that's what it was. So, I just, again, thank you very much for letting me be Pablo.
Oh,
And
it's
maybe
great.
I'll be a Pablo teenage whatever at some point too.
Well, you know, what we do is we listen to what people want and need and try and provide that. And so the only thing I wanted to do was entertain a 7-year-old for the couple of slides. And I thought, well,
Oh, well, what was her review?
oh, she loves it. She
She
loves
does
it.
good.
Yeah, we played the theme song for her the other night on a
Yeah.
Zoom call. She lives in another state. And we played the theme song, and about, I don't know, a bar into it, she got up, jumped around, and started dancing. And
Oh,
she
nice.
was digging it, you
Nice.
know. And of course, her cat's name is Pablo. That's where this was
Yeah,
born.
yeah.
So
Yeah.
Pablo is now famous. She has told me some interesting things from a 7-year-old. First of all, when she left here, she said to her father multiple times, "When I go home, I have to look in the freezer behind the peas." Because Pablo says that's where the save jar was, or the spend jar, or the share jar. When she got home, her parents, of course, had to help her with the jars. And then she told us that she had hidden the 3 jars and that Pablo went over and sniffed the spend jar and the share jar, but he wasn't very interested in the save jar.
Oh boy.
But if you ask her, she's learned all kinds of things from this one little video, things that I didn't put in there. Like we asked her after she saw it the first time, just one time, right at the end, "Did you learn anything?" She said, "Yes, if you work, you make money. If you work harder, you make more money." I didn't put that in the video. She picked that up somewhere from the thing, the
Wow.
video, and linked it together with whatever
Wow.
parents have taught her or somebody else has taught her. She started to connect the act of earning money with what you do with money. We talk about why, if there's ever one reason a parent would want their children to watch this, it's when we talk about why isn't there a finite, an infinite source of money? Why is money finite? Of course, we don't use that language, but why can't you just always have more, right? And yeah, I mean, Pablo tells them why you can't always have more.
Yeah, at some point, I remember my dad saying, and I remember where this quote came from, and he must have heard it from somebody. Well, I can't be out of money. I still got plenty of checks left,
I'd love to ask you a little bit about, we should say, the books that you do for Audible, that's your own voice, right? Your radio voice, not
Yeah.
your narration.
Well, yeah. And I just finished number 31.
Wow.
Yep.
That's
It
great.
was about your inner child. There's one particular author who, isn't that funny? Yeah.
Perfect.
This one particular author, his name is Richard Banks, and I've been very blessed. He just, you audition for books, generally speaking, and I did have to audition for additional ones, but he would ask if I would audition. I'm not saying that's a shoo-in, but I've done 8 books for him.
Pretty great.
So, yeah, and the thing is, the nice thing about this is that I don't generally do fictional things or multi-character things because I've just gotten into this, I shouldn't say pigeonhole, but I seem to be like Mr. Self-Help. You know, it's like his whole series of books are different things. Like, and I can't think of the titles off the top of my head, but it's very easy to do because you take the words and you do your best to bring them to life. Most of the authors will always say they're looking for a narrator who can perform. Right. So Pablo was tough. He's hard.
I think you
can perform
it.
Like Pablo.
Well, you know, Pablo's an interesting mix of a human and a cat, right?
Yeah.
Very smart cat. He's teaching.
Look at his certainly little... glad he can learn about finances because, like I said, for a young person, a young cat, it doesn't matter. You need to know that stuff. You can't just go around blindly thinking, I don't know. I'm just glad you're doing this. I'm because I think it is, and I'm not trying to say, you know, the school systems, we'll fix that. We'll do our own thing. But if you can't find it in particular places, but I bet you can Google now, you know, finances, Pablo, and something's going to come up.
You can Google Pablo the pirate cat will come up. Yeah. No, yeah. It's not, we're not blaming the schools. My gosh, the schools are, you know, they don't have enough money. They're overloaded. They're busy, you know, but let's face it. The teachers teaching the schools maybe never learned about money in an appropriate way. I have a lot of teachers as friends. So yeah, I can't thank you enough for doing it because it is different to have Pablo have a real personality. And, you know, I just want to say that you are always very modest. And I've heard some of your narration and your narration, the reason you get those books is because who wouldn't want to listen to your voice, your radio voice with your secret sauce and whatever it is you do to it when you start on those self-help books. I mean, it's very soothing. It's just great. I can't imagine listening to a high-pitched nasally voice while you're trying to relax and learn something about your inner strength, for instance, you know. So.
Well, no, I appreciate that. It's just that when I go to edit some of these pieces, because, you know, when you read something, you make mistakes, and so you have to go back, or I have my little trick. If I blow a line, I go so that I can go back and see that little on the digital audio thing and fix it. But when I have to edit it, I fall asleep.
Yeah, well, that's maybe.
I don't think I'm that soothing. I think I'm pretty boring.
Oh, no, not at all. And I certainly, Pablo is not boring in any way. And I hope that kids do watch Pablo and learn something from him. And
yeah, well, Pablo was more animated. I didn't have to worry about that. I could get kind of up for Pablo. So
yeah, Pablo moves pretty fast. That's how he rolls.
Yeah, absolutely. Cats do that. Well, listen, it looks like we're getting pretty close to the wrap up here. I'm sure people have questions. Again, can we get your phone number for Hug Your Money again?
Yes, you can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or as always, you can go to hugyourmoney.com. And keep in mind now, for fans of Pablo, and they seem to be growing actually by the day here, now you can email Pablo, again, please with parental guidance or parental permission, but his email address is pablo@hugyourmoney.com. Simple as that.
And he will get back to children with answers to their questions.
Oh, that's great.
He will pause and get back to them.
Pause. On that note, we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Francis Ram. Thank you very much for letting me do this.
My pleasure, Jay. Thank you.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you.